Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. Coming up on Inside Coverage, who's in, who's out for the kickoff opener. We have the final injury report, Cowboys and Eagles. What did Aaron Rodgers say about the Jets? We'll tell you. Plus, the great Jordan Rodrigue with a Matthew Stafford back update. Inside Coverage next. Let's do a live show, everybody. Welcome to Inside Coverage, Yahoo Sports Daily, Monday through Thursday. Close enough. NFL show live at 6:30 Eastern Time. My name is Andrew Siciliano. We thank you for sitting here and watching, or maybe even downloading and listening later. As we sit here today on yahoosports.tv and on the Yahoo YouTube page, we are roughly 1 hour and 45 minutes away from kickoff on a brand new NFL season. If you're counting at home, and I assume you are, and if you are, get out. The sun is shining. This is NFL season number 105. Every coach, every general, every coach, every quarterback, I beg your pardon, was on the podium today, some of which you might even hear from a little bit later. Josh Allen, if you're planning ahead, will join us tomorrow. And if there was a drinking game to be played today, oh, Frank Schwab, and special guest Jordan Rodrigue, senior NFL writer from The Athletic and the co-host of NFL Daily with good friend Greg Rosenthal. The game would be, here, we might do it. Raise a glass anytime someone says unscouted look today. It was nothing, Frank and Jordan, but unscouted looks every podium you went to.
That and coaches being annoyed they got to answer injury questions. You know, it's like if you took a drink every time a coach was annoyed at an injury question, you'd be passed out in like 10 minutes. Like, it just, but now's the time of year where they have to be clean about it. They got to say, yeah, Jaden Reed wasn't at practice. We'll talk about all these injuries coming up, but that's a bane of their existence this time of year.
Oh, I was going to say, I do like that Mike Vrabel skipped right to please be more efficient with your time.
Yes.
I will never get over this. It is so good.
they were pressing him on Christian Gonzalez's injury, mm-hmm. right? The second year quarter, mm-hmm. had a great mm-hmm. year going last year before he got injured, pressing him on is he going to go to IR? Or what is the fact that he's not out there today mean? He's like, guys, just please be efficient with your time. I don't have anything else to say. He's not going to be out there today. He's not. Guys, stop. Please, stop. Anyway, I should stop as well and give a proper intro, as I got my mind muddled to start the show, to the great Jordan Rodrigue, who covered the Rams forever for The Athletic, before that the Carolina Panthers, and now is moving to the senior NFL writer for The Athletic. Just wrote a great piece about 32 younger, maybe under the radar players that you need to keep an eye on, one for each team. We'll get to that coming up shortly. But stepping away, but still living here in Los Angeles to take a broader scope. Jordan, thanks so much for giving us 15 minutes of your time a night before the opener.
I'm honored to be here with you guys. I am a huge fan of both of you. As I know you know, Andrew, Frank, I hope you know that I am a massive fan of you. And yeah, the Rams, I mean, I'm all 32 now. The Rams can't keep me away. I'm still trying to sneak into their walkthroughs every so often. So for better or for worse, you know, I love it. And it's just nice to have football back, guys.
Let's open with those Rams. Why not? Let's get them out of the way. I saw them last week. I mean, what was left of the Rams, those that got on the plane to play in the third and final preseason game, the annual dresser win, dresser rehearsal. And the only thing anybody wanted to know about is how's Matthew Stafford's back? He's practicing, but he's also 37 years old, Jordan. And as anyone that's ever had a back issue can attest, and I'm raising my hand here on the side of the screen, some days are good and some days are bad. I'm not getting hit. I'm not taking 40 dropbacks per game. Where would you put the anxiety level in Woodland Hills for Matthew Stafford getting through the season?
getting through the season, I think it's just a concern that's valid. I would say, you know, this is just going to be something that everybody has got to keep an eye on. And certainly he's got to monitor and pay very close attention to internally. You know, we know Matthew Stafford as the guy who just sort of toughs things out and plays through anything. I often compare him to Monty Python's Black Knight character, where, you know, he's missing an arm. It's just a flesh wound. Come back here. I'll bite your legs off like that. That is absolutely Matthew Stafford. And in this case, though, that can be so dicey, especially if you take hits. So this is something where, yes, it will be a concern and a valid one all season. But if I know anything about Matthew Stafford, he's going to do everything and anything he could possibly think of, including sitting in a chamber to try to mitigate and manage this situation. And the season sort of lives and dies on his arm. So now it kind of does on his back too.
I'm glad you brought that up, that he'll do everything he can to get out there, because we all know sitting here, Matthew Stafford might be the toughest dude in the NFL. He's at least in the team picture, right? Like I never had a doubt he was going to play week one, maybe a little doubt when he wasn't practicing over and over, but you knew if he could be on the field, he would. And like we've talked about, it's not just, are you on the field? It's, are you close to 100%? Are you going to be able to make it the whole season? Being 37, it's no joke. And, you know, you see quarterbacks this age, especially when they're dealing with injuries, they don't want to get hit. Like, that's the one thing. They just want to get rid of the ball. Matthew Stafford ain't that kind of quarterback. So I wonder if his game has to morph a little bit because of the, there's a lot of pieces that need to be figured out as we start the season here, especially week one. They go against a really, really tough Texans defense. That's one of the games absolutely on my radar because of the Matthew Stafford factor. Does he look like Matthew Stafford, or is he a little bit less than we've used to see?
They're going to make him try to hold the ball too. That that cornerback group, that secondary overall is one of the best, if not the best, pound for pound in the NFL. And so they're going to try to make him hold the ball a little longer because they want to beat him up, because getting to him early not only will be a factor in their game plan, because he can make any type of throw and he can really make you pay, especially with these receivers that they've now kind of brought in and complement to each other. And it's really, really important that he can still be at his, you know, best slash most darkly chaotic version of himself, where he is that gunslinger, where he is making these throws that kind of like don't make sense in the normal laws of space and time, right? The sidearms and all of those types of things. And I think that this team, though, this roster, they're also built to protect him from himself in some ways. The run game that they've overhauled over the last 2 years, as he's been getting up there in age, this is a big factor for them. This could settle them down and, like I said, protect him a little bit if they can get the ball moving on the ground. And then also the way that they've really shored up their interior and exterior of their offensive line over the last couple of seasons, investing big money in those guard spots, especially in center. That is something where, again, they're trying to protect Matthew Stafford from himself a little bit and also raise the floor of a worst case scenario for this team.
Talking to Jordan Rodriguez, senior NFL writer for The Athletic, also co-host with friend of the program, Greg Rosenthal, on NFL Daily from NFL Media and iHeart, sitting right there in the NFL Network studio right up the road from where I sit right now. Jordan, a stone's throw or maybe a Matthew Stafford no-look flick from SoFi Stadium as we speak now. If you look at all these week one matchups, Jordan and Frank, I agree with you circling this one, and I'm a bit biased here. Like, there's a football over my shoulder that might suggest my bias right now. The low-key matchup here is Nick Cayley coming back home with Southern California native C.J. Stroud playing an NFL game for the very first time in Southern California. We talk about LaFleur and O'Connell and Raheem, who has Zach Robinson in Atlanta, all the branches of the Sean McVay tree. This was kind of low-key in the offseason. You have an offensive coordinator who had been here for 2 years as tight end coach, who now has to find a way to Jordan, protect C.J. Stroud and open up a run game, which was an Achilles heel last year, against a front seven that the Rams have put together through the draft the last 2 weeks that had six, or the last 2 years, that had 16 sacks in the playoffs last year.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating study, I think, in both new of these new branches of the McVay tree, so to speak, Chris Shula being one of them, the longtime assistant who is the second year now defensive coordinator of the Rams, who's doing some really, really interesting things with his front structures and the rotations, where we've seen them sort of build a hybrid blend of what, you know, Vic Fangio has done for a really long time with some of the coverages, with some of the things that Jesse Minter likes to do with odd fronts and pressure and some of the lighter boxes, but then also bringing in these crazy pass rush combinations, and Mike McDonald, what he likes to do. I just think it's so fascinating in that regard. It will test CJ Stroud and this rebuilt offensive line that they very much had to address as an emergency in this offseason. I think where Nick Caley factors in here is where everyone expects this to be a true Sean McVay looking system. You've seen Liam Cohen do this. You saw Kevin O'Connell with the new iteration that they installed together back in 2021 run some of this. You definitely have seen Zach Taylor run this. You've seen Zach Robinson run this. But I think this is going to be a little Patriots-y too, because that was Nick Caley's background even before he came to Los Angeles, and Sean McVay went out and poached him because he wanted him in his building. And with Nick Caley, I think that that actually really kind of helps, because yes, you're still going to see a lot of the elements that are tried and true with the Sean McVay system, the play action and some moving the pocket and some of the rollouts and the boots and then some of the route structures. But you're also going to see, I think, the ball come out really quick in some cases. And you're going to see some of that quick pass, outlet pass, keep you on your heels. You can't really sub very much stuff that we did used to see from some of the vintage Patriots offenses. And I think that's where Nick Caley is sort of trying to meld the two together.
I think that's a really, really good point that, you know, I mean, Caley's going to bring in this quick passing game because the Texans need to do that. We talk about their offensive line. Their offensive line might be number 32 if we're ranking them. You got to get Stroud comfortable. I think that's something Slowik just didn't do a good job of last year. And Caley bringing in new ideas. You talked about the Patriots connection. A lot of that stuff is just quick timing. Get it out. Nico Collins might have 150 catches this year just because he got to get rid of the ball so quickly. And who's your number one target? It's him. Yeah, you don't want that offensive line beating up C.J. Stroud again. I thought that's what derailed him last year. And it's Nick Haley's job to figure out, okay, how do I get C.J. Stroud back to the dude we saw his rookie year?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a great point there, the Patriots stuff as well. We spoke to C.J. last week, and he said he's been watching Tom Brady film, going back in the lab and looking at stuff 20 years old, saying, oh, look, that's look telling. How Brady can control. Yeah, it's all Patriots stuff for the most part that he's looking at. There's a Scarnecchia connection there as well. And so that's the rabbit hole that he's been going down. Some of it on YouTube, I would have to assume, at home in his free time. Jordan, I want to mention the article you wrote here as well, because I love, look, it's the time of the year to do lists. But this list, to me, is a little more fun. Because you're talking about 32 under-the-radar players, one from each team, that every fan should know. Some of them are rookies like Isaac Tesla, not Tesla, it's Tesla, who had a touchdown in every game, if memory serves. Others are just like players that maybe aren't fantasy picks per se, but they're, look, get to know this guy, he's going to factor. The one that I think, though, could be both week one is Ollie Gordon in Miami with the Dolphins running back injuries. Here's a guy who a couple of years ago at Oklahoma State looked like, I don't say a top 10 pick, but certainly a day one pick, and then he kind of fell off. But now Ollie Gordon could week one be a major factor.
I agree. And he's what they need, right? I mean, he's just this physical, explosive runner who runs with this combination of patience and confidence. And of course, he brings this physicality and size that they really need to add some teeth into this run game. And oh, by the way, actually run the ball the way that they should consistently be running the ball when you have a head coach and play caller in Mike McDaniels, who does literally come from the run game, come from working with offensive lines, come from working with tight ends, come from working with blocking structures. You need to be running the ball. And I think this is the guy who can really help them do it early. I would expect him to really turn some heads early on. And the scouts and executives that I talked to across the league for this piece actually agree. The number one response I would get when asking them about Ollie Gordon is, finally, this is exactly the player that Miami needs to put into their offense.
Yeah, and Gordon was a heck of a college player, I'll tell you that. I want to bounce right back to you because the name on the list, and Andrew mentioned him, was Isaac Tesla. I can't do it like you, Andrew. But he's the guy. There's two guys on this list that I noticed in the preseason. Trevion Henderson's obvious. Like, everybody saw him and was like, whoa, the Patriots got something here. So I'm not going to spend much time on him because I think we all kind of are excited to watch him. Mm-hmm. With Tesla, if the Lions can add another receiver, like to go along with Amon-Ra, to go along with Jameson, this offense is going to be ridiculous. How much do you think of an impact he can have right away? I really like the quote in there that you had that Brad Holmes said, I don't think he's the best receiver in the draft, but he was my favorite receiver in the draft. If you could expound upon that a little bit, and do you think Tesla could be like a difference maker right now for the Lions, who don't even really need him? He's almost a luxury.
I know. And isn't that so funny? I love that about the Lions team build is they're so firmly in contention at this point that they can afford luxury, right? Mm-hmm. Like they are at the very top of the class of the NFL. And I love that we're talking about them in that way, right? Like it's so fun. It does not get old and I hope it never does. So this is a quintessential Brad Holmes pick. You know, a lot of people forget that several years ago, he was pounding the table for this, young receiver who was setting a lot of records at Eastern Washington, but like the larger collective wasn't really paying too much attention to him because they thought he was going to run a slow 40 time, ended up being like a franchise icon for the Los Angeles Rams and a triple crown winner. That guy was Cooper Kupp. Brad Holmes led the way on the scouting and sort of like arguing for and on behalf of bringing that guy into the building, even though at that time, Sean McVay was adamant that he was actually going to start his first season in Los Angeles running a lot of 12 personnel and going after tight ends versus prioritizing receivers. So this is a lesson that Brad Holmes learned very, very early on and has stuck to his gut. And I love that he has found a process that works and he really just goes his own path despite, they traded up, 32 picks to get Tesla. And I think that this is just shows you exactly what the Lions are telling you, who exactly they think they are and who they know they are. And I just love that about them. In terms of his production, that was one of the things I think we all know about him because he's really shown in the preseason. I loved watching him dig out blocks. I think that's another thing they really like from him is how physical he could play along the line of scrimmage as well if he needs to. And guys like Trevion Henderson, for example, Emeka Buka, like these are names, yes, we know, but they haven't played a down in the NFL yet. And so hence they were still on this list. I'm so excited to see what he can do. And like you said, he is extraneous-ish in this offense as it stands, but I'm very excited to see what he can contribute. And I do think he will contribute early.
I want to hit one more name here. Jordan, give me 30 seconds on the other receiver in Cincinnati, now entering year three out of Princeton, the former track guy, Andre Yoshivash. It's all the attention on Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins with good reason. My gut tells me that T. Higgins' deal is only a year or two, despite how it was structured. That's just me. We'll do that another day. But Yoshivash has waited his turn. And there are a lot of teams that don't have one corner. Maybe they have two, but there's no way they have three. And he is a dangerous third weapon.
Yeah, I agree. And he seems to really, people I talked to were talking about how much chemistry he has developed with Joe Burrow. And some of that's out of necessity because there have been times when other players have been injured that he's needed to step into a larger volume role. And guys, I'm really uncool. So I did not know any of this. Apparently he's like famous on TikTok. I did not know this when I was compiling the list.
I didn't know this. What does he do on the TikTok?
No, it's like he has a fan base. You know, it's not like him making content. It's like he has a fan base and I am not cool. I'm not on that app, so I don't know. But I will tell you that that was something when I was having conversations with people. We're like, yeah, and he's got a good personality and apparently people really love him. I was like, what does that mean? So of course I was looking into this and you guys could do your own. He's got a fan base, I'll tell you that. And
interesting because go ahead, Jordan. I'm sorry. I was talking.
No, I mean I didn't know. We mentioned it in the story, but I did not know anything about it. I'm not cool. I'm not in with kind of like what's now or happening. But it is cool because you can definitely tell the chemistry. I mean, even watching them on the sideline together during the preseason game, you know, him and Joe Burrow, you could tell they've got a really good rapport. You can tell that he's trustworthy. I think being trustworthy to Joe Burrow is probably like a key trait identifier that the Bengals do look for when they go out and find these receivers. And then he's certainly one of them.
I am looking up Andre Yoshivash right now, which means TikTok, the algorithm, which of all the algorithms, TikTok is the darkest mirror into your soul. Like, seriously, it is. It is. It is the app for which Charlie Parker or Barker or Booker, whatever the heck his name is, made the show Black Mirror on Netflix. So I have no doubt that I will only get Bengals content or Skyline Chili content.
But the rest of the week, Hive is going to come after you. Phone, I guess,
yeah. The Hive
for looking up Andre
the Yoshi Hive, the Hive.
Yoshi Vash. Please, everybody, follow Jordan Rodrigue, as I like to tweet. Always read Jordan Rodrigue. Follow her on the Twitters or the Blue Skies or wherever it is you find your social media content. And of course, watch and listen to her pod with a fellow friend of the program, Greg Rosenthal, NFL Daily, from that studio you sit in right there at NFL Media. Jordan, have a fantastic season. Safe travels. Let's connect sometime soon. And I owe you one. I appreciate you.
Thank you, guys. It was such a pleasure. I'll come on anytime. And also, I hope to see you guys soon along my travels. Andrew, we're like neighbors, so I know I will see you soon. But I can't wait to see you guys. Take care.
Let's connect sometime soon. Bye, Jordan. Jordan Rodrigue, everybody. And again, check her pod out and her writing out, her pod with Greg Rosenthal. All right. We have injury news, Frank. I hold my hot hand right here. The injuries, because we have an injury report. It's Wednesday. It's game week. It's officially time to run all that down. And more importantly, tell you who is and who isn't going to play tomorrow as we sit here 25 hours away from kickoff. Cowboys and the Eagles. That is Frank Schwab. My name is Andrew Siciliano. You are watching Inside Coverage. Be right back. And we are back, everybody. We are back at Inside Covers. That is Frank Schwab. My name is Andrew Siciliano, waving papers in front of my face here. 6:30 Eastern Time, every Monday through Thursday, as we sit here right now, just 25 hours away from kickoff on a brand new NFL season, which means, Frank, oh, by the way, we have an injury report for that game, which we'll bring to you shortly. But let's get the big injury news out of the way. And that was early in the day at Jets practice. And this is always where coaches cross their fingers and like, hey, we got through the preseason. We got through training camp. Can we get to week one? The Jets were evidently unable to get to week one because they have an injury to a key part of that offensive line. And again, for Vera Tucker, easy for me to say, and be careful there, Andrew, it is a triceps injury that may require season-ending surgery. He's had this injury once before. This is the other arm for a team that is going to rely on running the football, whether it be the quarterback or whether it be Breece Hall or Braylon Allen. This is your best offensive lineman, at least best interior offensive lineman. You have some potential, certainly, at tackle, but this is your best guy. Like, this is devastating for a team not only looking to pull an upset against the Steelers week one, but put together a good season in the mold that you had tried to build all offseason.
And, you know, as you know, as everybody knows, I guess, when you suffer an injury at September 3rd, there's nobody out there who's going to replace them. Like, yeah, they're going to sign somebody. They're going to have a body in there. But you can't replace a guy like Vera Tucker at this stage of the game, especially. Tough injury for the Jets, for the player to have to go through this again. And like you said, it just upsets what they want to do. They want to run the ball. They were building around this offensive line. They had really invested a ton into that offensive line. You knew what kind of ball Aaron Glenn wanted to play with this team. It takes a big step back. And you know, first week, who do you get? Well, hopefully it's an easy. Nope, you get the Pittsburgh Steelers defense. Like, okay, figure out a plan to replace your best guard in 4 days. It's just really, really tough. I feel for everybody involved here, especially the player losing a year for a same injury he had, different arm too, which is really, really bad luck for the Jets and a really tough injury for them. Right. Like you said, get through the preseason, get through training camp, and now it happens. That's just a devastating blow.
Yeah, it's devastating for the Jets to lose him. It's devastating really for any team to lose someone this late before week one or any time. Let's clear that up. And then you have teams that are just holding their breath, for example. We'll get back to the Steelers and Jets in a second, but Kellen Moore comes to the podium late this afternoon and says, well, Chase Young is a calf injury. It happened today in practice. When you hear calf injury, you immediately fear the worst, but at a minimum, you think, well, you're not coming back in a couple of days because you don't want to risk a calf injury. Who knows what his status will be when the Saints open up against the Cardinals on Sunday. But the Jets, back to them, are going to have to beat Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers coming to town. We spoke yesterday about Mike Tomlin, Frank, saying when asked, hey, is Aaron Rodgers let on at all that this game may mean a little bit more? And he said, number one, no. And number two, if he did feel that way, he certainly wouldn't tell you. Well, Aaron Rodgers was asked today, basically, hey, Aaron, is this just like every other opener, or does this one mean a little bit more? And he looked at the camera, and as you can see on the screen, he said, it's week one. Now, there are a lot of things I could say to this. If we have the audio, maybe it would explain it a little bit better. The reporter, and I don't know who it was, I'm not taking shots, asked the multiple choice question. Okay. Hey, Aaron, is it this or is it that? Well, why give him the easy way out?
Right.
Aaron Rodgers is probably too smart to be tricked by any such tactic regardless. And I was mad at myself yesterday when we were playing back Aiden Hutchinson because I did that once with him. Is it this or is it that? Stop it. Stop giving people multiple choice questions. Aaron, does this mean more to you? Regardless, he said it's week one, but he had that little... Is smug the wrong way to describe it? He had that little smug-ish.
Smug is always the right way with Aaron Rodgers, yeah.
Look on his face. He then went on to, you know, praise Darnell Washington and Pat Freiermuth and say all the right things about everything, right? It's, the Jets also have a different defensive staff. Yes, I may know the personnel, but now Aaron Glenn is there and Ulbrich is gone and Saleh is gone. So I don't know them that well. But... if we know, Frank, Aaron Rodgers at all, we know this means something to him. And I would be upset if it didn't mean something to him.
Of course it does. Of course it does. And, you know, it's one of those things where I wonder why we're not talking about the inverse of this enough. That we know it means a lot to Aaron Rodgers, right? He probably didn't love the way that things ended with the Jets. He's talked about it. He didn't love the way things ended with the Jets, that Aaron Glenn kind of blew him off when he flew across country to have a meeting. But don't the Jets kind of want to beat Aaron Rodgers too? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know the locker room dynamic or anything, but he is a guy who has rubbed teammates the wrong way in the past. Like, don't you think Aaron, like, you just, in general, you just want to beat a guy who you were with and you have some relationship with and you want to go out and get. So, yes, I think that this game means a lot to Aaron Rodgers. He would love to win this, but I think the Jets want to beat Aaron Rodgers too. I think it works both ways. So that's what makes this fun. And, you know, as we talk about this and, you know, Aaron Rodgers not taking the bait on talking about the Jets and talking about revenge and this and that. We talked all out. What did we say before Aaron Rodgers signed with the Steelers? Like, oh, it's going to be too much drama, too much hassle, all the distractions, blah, blah, blah. He signs. Since then, we have not heard really a peep from Aaron Rodgers. Really, when you think about the summer,
not much.
It's been, okay, here's an update on Aaron Rodgers throwing to these guys, whatnot. There hasn't been a big controversy. There hasn't been a ton of Pat McAfee interviews.
Do you want controversy? Is that what you're saying? You miss the controversy?
I like controversy. I'm sure the Pittsburgh Steelers do not like controversy. I think it's a really good sign for the Steelers. So Aaron Rodgers has just come in and he's just doing his job. We're not hearing all the sideshow stuff that happened with the Jets or even late in his Packers career. This is just Aaron Rodgers showing up and being employee number 12. Employee number 8, I guess he's wearing
eight.
Now because Terry Bradshaw.
But yes.
Employee number 8. Like, he's just going about his business. Honestly, I think that's
but
a really good
But employee number 12
Steelers
has taken shots at employee number 8.
He sure has, yes. But even Aaron didn't take that. He kind of made a joke about, oh, Terry, blah, blah, blah. I don't even know what you're talking about, chewing bark, blah, blah, blah. But there's been no distraction with Aaron Rodgers. I do think that's a good sign for the Steelers as they head into the season.
Yeah, I do as well. You want to run down some injuries? I don't know. I'm not excited for injuries, but I'm kind of mildly excited that we have a Wednesday injury report. Granted, about 20 minutes before we came on the air, Sean Payton, in his normal Wednesday presser practice there in Dove Valley, said to the assembled media, I will not discuss injuries this year at all. Like, there's no reason to. I won't tell you when someone's coming back. There'll be an injury report. And that's it. I bet you that doesn't last until October, but that's just me. Not allowed to bet.
Coaches always say that. And then the next week they're like, well, you know, it comes and goes. By the way, Dove Valley somewhere on this map behind me. Like you could probably find it if you look hard enough. Yeah. So no, I think that most coaches hate. Have you dealt with a million coaches? So have I. I don't know that there's a coach that loves talking about injuries, and I know most of them just hate it. They hate this injury report that comes out. So Sean Payton being like, I'm not talking about injuries all year. He might not stick to it, but I'm sure he feels that. He doesn't want to talk about this stuff. He's like Bill Belichick putting out the blank depth chart for UNC. These guys do not like talking about injuries.
I mean, blank depth chart is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. I'll be honest with you. I'm not calling Bill dumb. I'm saying blank depth chart is dumb. Today, we had two coaches, both Raheem Morris and I believe Zach Taylor, say they do not care about nor look at depth charts. So everyone who got upset about where a certain rookie quarterback was on a depth chart, like, just stop it. The coaches don't care either. Anyway, all right, let's go down the injuries. So the opener coming up tomorrow, shortly after 8:00 Eastern time, they're going to drop the banner. Nick Sirianni will then, upon hearing that there is a banner unfurled, take his team out of the locker room. He will not have Tanner McKee with him. He is officially out. Sam Howell, who was acquired only a week ago, is set to be the number two quarterback. The number three quarterback in Philadelphia would be Kyle McCord. He is on the practice squad after getting cut, sixth-round rookie out of Syracuse. So Sam Howell, if anything were to happen tomorrow to Jalen Hurts, would be the number two quarterback back in the NFC East. It is noteworthy, Frank, that Landon Dickerson has no injury designation. The guy hurt his knee at that Sunday stadium practice, the one in which, Travis Kelce's dad was FaceTiming with Travis and Taylor Swift after Travis that Sunday night popped the question. That's when he got hurt, and then he had his knee scoped a couple of days later. He is already back, and he has no injury designation other than he has a back injury, but was full participation. So his knee's not even listed. The surgery was August 12th. That's absurd. For the Cowboys, Perrion Winfrey, the former Oklahoma fourth-round defensive tackle taken by the Browns, who washed out of the league, made the team, is out. But Trayvon Diggs and Tyler Guyton, Frank, this is news, have no injury designation. So for the most part, the Cowboys have a clean bill of health.
Yeah, and really so the Eagles. I'm glad. You hate to drag into a season with injuries, and both of these teams pretty healthy. The Dickerson thing, you worried. You're like, oh, this looks like a season ender. Nope, he has surgery August 12th, and he's going to play less than a month later. Sometimes, Andrew, the toughness of these guys is just remarkable. It's unbelievable at times.
Yeah, beyond unbelievable. And remember, Landon Dickerson was the guy that brought the beer and the coloring books to the O-line room this year. Coloring books a little more significant than beer. Jim Harbaugh. No, yes, Jim,
sure?
Not John.
Sure,
yes. Nah, it depends. Coloring and beer could be fun together. Jim Harbaugh on the podium about 90 minutes ago in Sao Paulo with his wide-eyed Charger hat looking around the room. Doesn't speak Portuguese, but he brought that Jim Harbaugh awkwardness to the podium. It was delightful. He said that Najee Harris will play. Like, he's a full participant in practice. Harris, after the 4th of July blow up, quite literally, and the eye injury, is going to play. The flip side is Kansas City rookie wide receiver Jalen Royals, the 4th-round pick, did not travel, so he will not play. Again, not an entirely clean bill of health. And remember, Frank, the Chiefs are without Rashee Rice. He's suspended the first 6 weeks of the season. But for the most part, these two teams good to go.
Royals missing out on that trip to Brazil. That's a bummer. I wish he could have made the trip there just to be inactive, probably. I don't think he's going to be a big factor early. But you talked about Najee. I don't expect him to be a big factor either. He hasn't really practiced or done much football activity-wise. I know he's going to be ready. He's a pro and all that. But again, as I talked about yesterday, Omarion, it's Omarion season. He's going to be awesome. Can't wait to watch him Friday. Can't wait to watch his game on Friday. It's going to be a really good game and a big one in the AFC West.
And the next primetime game after the Friday game, which is the YouTube game with friends of the program, Rich Eisen, Kurt Warner, Stacey Dales, and someone named Destroying with 6 million YouTube followers on the sideline. The next primetime game will be in Orchard Park, playoff rematch, Bills, Ravens, Sunday Night Football, Tirico and Collinsworth on NBC. And Frank, after listening to Sean McDermott this morning, I don't know who's going to play corner for the Bills right now. Tre'Davious White still not practicing. He had that injury 2 weeks ago. And Christian Benford was limited today with a leg injury. Remember, Maxwell Hairston is out the first month of the year. He was a first-round pick. They brought Jordan Poyer back, then had to cut him off the practice squad today, a procedural thing for Gabe Davis. Poyer will be back. He's a safety, obviously. You right now are going to face Lamar Jackson with massive questions at corner. Buffalo went out and rebuilt this defense, primarily on the front seven, but they took Max Hairston there in the first round. You could be facing Todd Monken and Lamar Jackson with your fourth, fifth, and sixth corners.
Ain't great. And this is the kind of game where we could be sitting here, 17, 18 weeks from now saying, hey, remember when Team A beat Team B in that Sunday night game week one? That's the reason they're the number one seed.
It's home field advantage.
That's how big this game is. It's enormous. Yeah. This is as big of a game as there is in the entire NFL season, really. And it's week one. And to your point, the Bills shorthanded. Also, I'm interested. I know Khalil Shakir is back. He's practicing. But as we know, that doesn't necessarily mean a guy's 100%. I hear high ankle sprain. I know Khalil Shakir has had this injury before, and he recovered very quickly from it. It's still, I want to see him out on the field and see what he's doing and how he looks if he's 100% for week one.
Yeah, I agree. He is officially listed, for what it's worth, as a full participant Wednesday in practice at wide receiver. Meantime, in Green Bay, also a full participant, Jordan Love, coming back after that procedure on his hand. Micah Parsons limited. Matt LaFleur was asked if he is going to play, and if so, how much can he give you? He said, yeah, he's obviously going to try to play, and it sounded like he didn't have any doubt that he would play. But again, Matt LaFleur cautious on Wednesday. In Miami, I know we touched on this earlier with Jordan. We have Tyreek Hill, Devon Achane, both limited. Jalen Wright did not practice. So the Dolphins, as they get ready for week one, have some question marks as to who will their offensive weapons be. As we said earlier, get to know Ollie Gordon, rookie running back out of Oklahoma State. And then in San Francisco, Juwan Jennings will play per Kyle Shanahan. I know you're skeptical, however. They say it's not a contract, it's a calf. Both can be true. And right now, allegedly, neither will prohibit Juwan Jennings from being on the field Sunday.
What worries me, and I'm not trying to wish bad juju on Juwan Jennings or anybody in this world, but if this was a calf, I still don't know. And honestly, I do not trust the 49ers at this point. If it was a calf, you're coming back right away, practicing, playing 6 days later or whatever. The risk of re-injury is so high at that point. I worry for Juwan Jennings. I hope he's healthy the full season. Hope he balls out, has 1,500 yards. He's a heck of a player. I like the story, kind of a late emerging guy who really became a star last year. But I worry about re-injury. One thing I don't want to get, but the Packers, Jaden Reed didn't practice today. He has a Jones fracture in his foot. We all saw the walking boot. He says, they kind of blew it off. Like, oh, we're probably going to practice later in the week. We'll let you. They're being very dodgy about this. If Jaden Reed is not 100%, that Packers-Lions game is massive. We talked about Bills-Ravens being a huge game. Packers-Lions is massive, too, especially in the NFC North. Jaden Reed's not 100%. That receiving crew gets pretty thin all of a sudden in a game. I like the Lions in that game. I think the Lions are really going to be angry almost, so the Packers are getting all the headlines. And Jaden Reed's not answering the bell for that game because of a Jones fracture in his foot where all the internet doctors, Andrew, tell me that he shouldn't be really playing. Like, this is not really something you want to be playing with. If he's not there for week one, I think that's a huge blow to the Packers offense we're not talking about.
Friendly reminder, don't pay attention to internet doctors. Few things are more irresponsible than internet doctors, some of whom used to be real team doctors, tweeting videos from their couch suggesting that player X is out for however long they're determining while drinking a beer on their couch. Great, thanks. Also, like, Frank, how many of these like Sunday night pitches do you get from wannabe TV injury docs? Like, hey, did you see so-and-so blew his knee out? Can I please offer you my client, Dr. So-and-so, to come on the air? No, you may not.
No.
You may not.
I get it. I'm glad we just found the salty part of you, Andrew. It took, what, like 3 weeks? Like, you know, I'm always cynical. I think I'm turning you a little more cynical as we go.
The injury doctors, first of all, the league office hates it. I cannot tell you how many times from a league-wide broadcast perspective, right? When you are on a league partner, whether it's DirecTV or CBS or Fox or ABC, any of them, right? Or the network, the league will always tell you and remind you if you mess up, do not speculate on injuries. You cannot do it. So the idea that we're going to put some doctor on who hasn't examined the patient because they can determine from you know, their rewind button on their DVR that they know how long this guy is going to be out is comical. Real quick, Travis Hunter listed on the Jaguars depth chart as wide receiver one. Okay, he's a starter there, but second team corner. To quote Raheem Morris and Zach Taylor, we don't look at depth charts. Frank, do you think this matters? I think it's interesting only because it's Travis Hunter. But once the game starts, I don't know how much it's relevant. Your thoughts?
I think they're going to use him much like the preseason game we saw him, where he is full-time on offense because he's so valuable there. And then they're going to pick their spots on defense. I think he will play some third down. Look, that's a shootout type of game, right? Against Carolina Panthers. I can see both those teams being, you know, in high 20s or low 30s. Like, neither team has the greatest defense in the world. So I think Travis is going to get his run at corner too. I don't know if it's 20, 25 snaps it's third and eight. Go out to Travis. Like, I think it's going to be that. I think you're going to pick their spots with Travis Hunter on defense. But I know I'm going to have my eyes on that TV because I want to see what Travis Hunter does in his debut.
Absolutely. Coming up next, I mentioned earlier, it's the time of the year for lists. It's also the time of the year for predictions because we've all been asked to make predictions. They are guaranteed to be accurate. For the MVP, the offensive, the defensive player of the year, rookies of the year, coach of the year. And coming up next, Frank will tell you who's going to win the Super Bowl. Guaranteed. Frank Schwab, Andrew Siciliano, Inside Coverage. No matter where you go on your social media, you're going to see predictions for the new season. Hi, that's Frank. I'm Andrew. This is Inside Coverage. We're here 6:30 Eastern Time, Monday through Thursday on yahoosports.tv and the YouTube channel as well. Frank, I'm still getting used to the particulars here. It was like riding a bike, one bike for 14 years. Now I'm trying to rewire my brain. yahoosports.tv. If you go to yahoosports.com as well, or you see Frank, or me, or Jory, or Charles on Twitter, because we've been retweeting the story today, all of us were asked to make our NFL predictions. These are no doubt predictions that will later be curated by one of the 32, if not all of the 32 teams, to put on the bottom of the screen at one point for some kind of social flex when one of their players or the team collectively does something. Because I feel like, and I'm all for making picks, by the way, I feel like these picks now just, they're like, we're cannon fodder for team social media accounts.
Yeah, I get that. By the way, okay, so I just want to get right into this because I thought I was coming in hot. I have the Ravens over the Buccaneers in the Super Bowl.
Do I really want to put out the Buccaneers?
I know. I'm gonna pitch it to you real quick because I was like, do I really want to put myself out there? Buccaneers at such a, and then you come in with the Rams winning the Super Bowl. Explain yourself here, Andrew. I love it. I love being bold.
Sure.
Los Angeles Rams Super Bowl champions. Tell me about this.
Okay. So here are all the picks right now on the screen. We got Chuck McDonald, we got Tice, we got Harmon, we got Charles Robinson, we got Jory, we got the whole crew here. It's really small on my screen. I literally can't read every day, but you can see where all the picks are. I'm the only guy here picking the Rams. I think the Rams, partly because of the defense I mentioned earlier, 16 sacks in those two playoff games, the win over the Vikings in Arizona, and then the almost win, they lost, Eagles won the Super Bowl, in the snow in Philadelphia. They have rebuilt, Les Snead has, that front seven after the departure of Aaron Donald the last 2 years, with the likes of Byron Young and Kobe Turner and Braden Fisk and Jared Verse, and they get after the passer. If Matthew Stafford can stay healthy, and if you can get Kyren Williams and Blake Corum as a great 1-2 punch in the backfield, even maybe throw in rookie Jarquez Hunter. Mm-hmm. You have Devontae Adams and you have Puka Nacua. This team, if Tyler Higbee is back and fully operational, has a lot of weapons. And I do think that the NFC West, well, I know it's not nearly as good as the AFC West. I don't think this division is as good as people think it is. And I think the Rams can get there. I truly, truly do. The Ravens pick isn't very controversial here, but is, Frank, honestly, is my Rams pick so far? I mean, I think, to be honestly, to be frank, Frank, I think your Bucks pick is far more radical than my Rams pick.
It probably is, but I just, I like that you had the courage. I don't want to say any other word that'll get us kicked off a live show, but that you had the courage to pick the Rams, because I would really chalk you a champion with the Ravens. I will say this about the Rams. I almost picked Jared Verse as my defensive player of the year. I think he's going to have a monster year. Absolute positive monster season. Yeah, so I don't agree with you on the Rams. Let me be honest. I worry too much about Stafford's back. I think the Alarik Jackson thing, we haven't talked enough. I hope he's healthy all year, but he's dealing with blood clots and he's such a big part of their line. But that defense was playing really well at the end of the year. McVay's awesome. Like, he's a wizard. Stafford stays healthy all year. I can at least see where you're coming from with it. I like the pick. Let's put it that way. I don't agree with it, but I like the fact that you picked.
All right. And the Bucks are bold. I mean, that is a bold pick. I don't see it as others, but
I love them. Love them. I think they're loaded. I think they're going to win that division by a few games, too. That's why. I think they win that division by a few games. They're going to backdoor their way into the number one seed. If you've listened to Inside Coverage at all, you've heard me talk about the Bucks this offseason. They're kind of my pet project. I think they're the number one seed in the NFC just because I don't trust any other team in that division. I think they go 6-0 against the division, and I think they're going to, well, the Lions and Packers beat each other up, and the Rams get a challenge from the 49ers, and the Commanders and Eagles go out. I think the Buccaneers just skate to 13-4, that kind of a record. It might be like the Titans a few years ago, where they're not really that good. They're not really the best team. But if you're two home wins away from a Super Bowl, hey, you know, I mean, number one seed has a lot of advantages.
All right, that is bold. Let's go to MVP. These are not bold picks. We both have AFC North MVPs. Frank, you go Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
I go Joe Burrow, who was Joe Cool today on the podium. He was asked 1,000 times why you feel better. Are you healthy? Is this as confident as you've ever been? Why do you think this team is going to start differently this year? Zach Taylor is 1-11. Combined in his career, weeks 1 and 2, Joe kind of demanded his way onto the field this year in the preseason. If Joe Burrow is healthy, he is going to light it up this year if he stays healthy and that team stays healthy. Now, is the defense going to be good enough? I don't think it is. I think it's going to be better.
See, that's what I want.
I don't
Andrew,
think
I
this is a
about
Super Bowl
that.
Team. Yeah,
let me.
But
ask
I do
you,
think
because...
Joe is going to play so well that you're going to look at the math and say, look how far they did get. Joe Burrow did carry a bad defense, and they didn't win it all, but he deserves the MVP.
Hmm. Do you think they win the division? The Bengals.
I think the Ravens win the division.
Okay, and that's my problem. That's what I have trouble getting, since I'll give you a little bit of MVP history, because as somebody who might wager on such things, I pay attention to this stuff. Since 2012, a player from a wildcard team has not been an MVP. That was Adrian Peterson, 2012.
It's
before that, you got to go back to 2009. Peyton Manning won it as a wildcard team. So since 2009, basically everybody but Adrian Peterson, who was kind of a strange pick, every one of those has been a number one seed or a number two seed in their division. I can't get the Bengals. That's my problem. That's kind of why I pick Lamar as my MVP. Like, I know it's chalky, but if I'm picking the Ravens to go to the Super Bowl, I kind of have to pick Lamar to win MVP. Odds-wise, I think Brock Purdy has a good shot at it, actually. But otherwise, it's going to be really, really hard for Joe Burrow to win MVP without winning the division just based on history. But to your point, I think Joe Burrow puts up such good numbers that the voters are going to look at him. I thought he had a shot last year. If the Bengals would have been a wild card last year, I think a lot of voters would have said, look at these stats that Joe Burrow put up.
Exactly.
Unbelievable. he's our MVP. He would have got plenty of votes. Let's put it that way.
I want to get through some of these other ones here. I'm not going to fight you on Brock Purdy, but I will walk home if Brock Purdy wins the MVP.
If the 49ers end up being number one seed, Mayfield could win it if they're a number one seed.
I guess you and I view the 49ers differently. I'm not anti-Brock Purdy. I just don't see the 49ers being anywhere close to a one seed.
Okay,
but I like Brock Purdy. I just don't. I guess we view the team a little bit differently.
It's one of those things. I always say the formula is the formula. It's almost always a number one seeded quarterback. And if Brock Purdy or Baker Mayfield or Jared Goff, even whoever is the number one seed in each conference, those guys have a really good chance to win MVP.
Offensive player of the year, you go Jamar Chase, who won the Triple Crown last year. Can't go wrong there. I'm going to go Jahmyr Gibbs. Now,
I like that.
That was kind of a be bold, do something different pick, full disclosure. I just tried to be different there. I don't know what the offense is going to truly look like with Ben Johnson in Chicago and John Morton calling plays. I don't know, but
sure.
Jahmyr Gibbs is a beast. If not him, I might have gone Bijan Robinson. I'm going to go Jahmyr Gibbs, Frank.
Yeah, and for me, Jamar Chase is just like, okay, he probably maybe deserved to win it last year, but how could you vote against Saquon Barkley? Like, he had such a monster year, he had to be offensive player of the year. This year, I think Chase is going to have just as good of a season. It's going to be, quote unquote, his turn. Like, we gave it to Saquon last year. Here you go, Chase. Here you go, Jamar. You should have won it maybe last year at any other year that Saquon Barkley's 2024 season didn't exist. Here's your offensive player of the year award, Jamar. I think he wins it this year.
Yeah, he's a slam dunk if they stay healthy. If Joe Burrow puts together the MVP season, I think he does, then Jamar Chase easily is the 1-2 there. Defensive player of the year, I'm going to go Myles Garrett. I mean, he's the best defensive player on earth. Sure. It's hard to win two times in 3 years. How good are the Browns going to be collectively? I don't know. But could he – look, he led the NFL. People look at the sack numbers last year that Trey Hendrickson had, obviously, fantastic, 37.5 collectively the last 2 years. Myles Garrett led the NFL with 22 TFLs, and he still had 14 sacks. He is as disruptive a player as there is in the National Football League, as Burrow said today, that if you let him, he will win the game Sunday. The key is just not letting him. Your pick is Kyle Hamilton. We had a DB win it last year in Patrick Surtain. Because you followed this stuff, I'm intrigued. And Kyle Hamilton's a great pick, by the way. When is the last time we had DBs win it back-to-back years?
Because it's been a long time. Okay. I mean, it's usually here or there. Charles Woodson wins, Stephon Gilmore wins. And it's a kind of a island, you know, and a few years pass and then another one wins. But I hope we're getting away from just, hey, who led the NFL in sacks? Okay, that's defensive player of the year. I think there's more nuance to it. And I think Kyle Hamilton is as valuable of a defensive player as there is. Like, obviously, Garrett and Watt and Parsons. Like, we all know about those guys. I think Kyle Hamilton, who plays a different position, obviously, is right there in value because he could play deep. He could play up near the box. He makes plays all around the field. And obviously, I think the Ravens are going to be really good this year. So that was my bold pick, I guess. I wanted to give Kyle Hamilton some love because you watch that guy on Sundays, and man, he does it all. He just does it all. He can, whatever they need, whatever Zach Orr, their defensive coordinator, needs, he's like, okay, Kyle Hamilton, you're my chess piece. He's the queen on the board, and he can do anything you want him to.
Let's blow through these last. We got 2 minutes remaining. Coach of the year, you go Liam Cohen. I go Aaron Glenn. I don't know that I feel so strongly about the Aaron Glenn pick anymore after the Elijah Vera Tucker injury today, but oh well. Rookie of the year, offensively, you go Omarion Hampton. I can't argue with that one. I'm going to go Cam Ward. I don't think they win a lot of games, but I just think that he's going to be good enough.
He's awesome.
Where he's going to get the consideration. Clearly, defensive rookie of the year. I don't know that anyone has anybody other than Abdul Carter.
That's got to be Abdul. That's got to be the pick. Like if somebody else, I will say Carson Schwestinger, and you've seen him close up. If somebody can steal it, it's Carson. He could have 150 tackles. It wouldn't surprise me.
He could, and he's going to wear the green dot on Sunday. A rookie.
Awesome. He's an awesome player,
starting and middle linebacker wearing the green dot. I mean, there are a couple of guys that wore the green dot last year, or rather, rookies that played the mic last year. Junior Colson, week 18 here for the Chargers. I think Edgerrin Cooper did it maybe for one game, but they didn't actually wear the green dot. Schwestinger did it at UCLA a year ago. He is going to do it week number one. All right, pulling up the rundown one more time. Biggest surprise in our final minute. You say Broncos beat the Chiefs for the AFC West. I just say Arizona Cardinals. I'm vague there. Biggest disappointment. You say Commanders miss playoffs. Wouldn't surprise me, Frank, because look, you know, step coming. Back. Yeah. Sometimes you're building the roster here. Mine is simply the Dolphins. I'm just going to be vague.
Yeah, I get it.
The Dolphins.
I get that. The Dolphins. No, and I understand what you mean. They're going to be a disappointment. Yeah.
Not disappointing, however, I'll tell you right now, Josh Allen, the reigning MVP, who joins this program tomorrow. Friends, it is kickoff eve. Happy football to you and yours. Get some rest. Tomorrow is going to be a big day. We'll be back with you 6:30 Eastern time on Thursday to kick off the NFL's 105th season. For Frank Schwab, I'm Andrew Siciliano. Thanks for watching Inside Coverage.